What a day. Here is what you need to know about today. A former CIA director says Iranians need to choose to be with the United States because the U.S. and the West are normal and decent, unlike the Russians and the Chinese, he says. Did Israel blow up a Saudi refinery and then try and blame it on Iran? And Shias all over the world, but specifically in Pakistan and in Iraq, are attacking U.S. sites, U.S. embassies, and also apparently fighting with their own police. Is it worth starting a religious war to take over Iran? Hell of a question, right? We're going to debate that with two contrasting guests right here on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. Something very revealing is taking place today. You know what Aramco is? You've probably heard of Aramco. It's like one of the biggest oil companies in the world. It's the Saudi oil company, right? So obviously, it's one of the biggest in the world. Well, yesterday, and this, we didn't see this as a big deal when it happened, but they were hit with a drone strike yesterday. Here's the video. Here's the video. It was mentioned, but not a big deal was made out of it because so many places are getting hit. And there it is. Now, this is not just any refinery. This is the Ras Tanura oil refinery, the biggest in the Gulf, by far one of the biggest in the entire world. 550,000 barrels a day? Is that what the number is? I'm gonna check myself as I say that, as a matter of fact, because I want to make 550,000 barrels a day are processed through that site. You can imagine then how important that is. So there's a real question now. Everybody assumed that it was Iran, right? Iran boasting, but not here. Apparently, Iran has sent a message to the Saudis telling them, as soon as this happened, by the way, they sent a message saying, hey, we didn't do this. We've been shooting a lot of missiles, but that one was not one of ours. Here, watch this.
How about the Saudi oil fields just across the Gulf? Why is that a target?
No, we are not responsible for that. We have already been in touch with our Saudi brothers, and we have talked about this issue. Iran is not responsible for the attack against the oil installations in Saudi Arabia.
And by the way, Iran has been bragging about all the other targets that they've been hitting. So the fact that in this case they would say, nope, we hit all those other places, but no, we didn't do that one. We didn't do that one. That's what they're saying, right? So then the question is, so who did it? If it wasn't Iran, biggest refinery in the world, all of a sudden blows up, there's a fire there, they've got to shut it down completely. You can imagine the effect that's having on global oil prices, right? So who did it? Well, think about this for a minute. The U.S. wants a short war, right? Focused. Israel does not. So reports are now circulating that Israel has been acting on some of these Gulf states as if they were Iran, right? And why? Well, again, Trump wants a short, focused war. Israel doesn't. They want the Middle East to break up, right? They want all Middle East countries to be involved in this big conflagration, as we've discussed in the past. So watch this. Here's a report from my friend Tucker Carlson, who, by the way, has been right about everything he's called with this thing, right? Watch what he reported last night.
So it's probably not, hasn't been reported, but it's a fact that last night in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, authorities arrested Mossad agents planning on committing bombings in those countries. Now, that's weird. That doesn't make any sense. Why would the Israelis be committing bombings in two Gulf countries which are also being attacked by Iran? Aren't they on the same side? No. No, Israel wants to hurt Iran and Qatar and UAE and Saudi and Bahrain and Oman and Kuwait. And they've succeeded.
And they've succeeded. Let me tell you something about Tucker Carlson. He has really good sources when it comes to this material. Like I said before, he's rarely wrong about this stuff. Hasn't been wrong yet. And his dad was a CIA agent, so he's connected. By the way, there's already been another hit on a Saudi target. We don't know who hit it, but the U.S. Embassy in Saudi Arabia, the U.S. Embassy in Riyadh was hit by two drones just today. Fire started. Staff has already been removed from the building. Here, we've got the pictures where you can see exactly what's going on there in the foreground. And again, this is a very important deal because it's starting to make the Saudis have to choose sides. And the question is, are they going to be engaged? And how much will that escalate the situation? And by the way, speaking of embassies, this is not the only embassy that's been hit, right? Already, look at this. This is in Amman, Jordan. We told you yesterday that two apparent missiles had hit, and they're now embroiled in this thing as well, Jordan is. Well, they have shut down their embassy there. But the real story when it comes to embassies began in Baghdad late yesterday, around 6 o'clock in the evening, when suddenly Shias there started attacking the embassy. Now, remember, we told you that the supreme leader of Iran is a very important religious figure to Shias. You know, it would be like the Pope to Catholics, but in their religion, he's their religious leader. So taking him out, murdering or killing him and killing his family is obviously not playing well in this part of the world. So in places like Iraq, that's majority Shia, people are angry and they're attacking. And the protesters stormed the U.S. embassy. We've got the pictures to prove it. It's bad. Watch. Now, let me tell you something else as an American that you got to worry about something like this. The people protecting these embassies are Marines. They're U.S. Marines. That's part of their duty in places like this. And that's what happened in Baghdad, and it's now happening in Pakistan as well, in several cities in Pakistan, as a matter of fact. Thousands of people, they say as many as 5,000 to 8,000 people, filled with anger, took to the streets against the U.S. embassy, against other U.S. installations in Pakistan, because they're angry about the killing of what they believe is their religious leader, Ali Khamenei of Iran. Karachi, Islamabad, several other cities, angry protesters battling. The death toll already stands, according to our last check, at between 20 and 25, and it's expected to grow. Here, watch. Now, this is why a lot of people are saying, Sachs and the Mearsheimers and Tucker and others, that this is not a good plan, because it's not going to be simple. It's not going to be short. This will take much longer than people expect because of this. This is the unexpected that happens in wars. But there's at least one person in the United States, he's a former CIA director, Mike Pompeo, and he was on essentially the neocon network in the United States, Fox News. And he actually said the quiet part out loud. I want to play something for you, which is going to possibly make you want to fall off your chair, that this man would say something like this, so brazen at a time like this. This does not help. If I was Donald Trump, I'd call him and say, you're not helping. So what he's saying is, by the way, as you're about to hear, is this is really all about taking control of Iran and making it just another U.S. vassal to try and stop the burgeoning multipolar order, which is developing around the world, which most of you who watch this show know about. It's about hegemony. It's about the U.S. continuing to control the world. And Iran is too big a piece on the board to allow it to become part of that other global order, if you will. In other words, we're protecting our banking system, right, as Americans, protecting our military, protecting our currency, right, against those other countries, those BRICS countries, et cetera. And Iran has to be a part of what we are. But fine, if you're going to make that argument, but look how he makes it. Look what he says.
We want the Iranian leadership to fall, and we want those who are in between trying to figure out which side to be on Don't pick the Chinese. Don't pick the Russians. Don't pick the Ayatollah. Be with Western civilization. Be decent. Be a normal nation. And you, too, can live a wonderful life with your family and not suffer under Ayatollah as you have for so, so long.
Can you imagine telling the Arab world, people in Middle Eastern countries, if you want to be decent, if you want to be normal, you got to be like us. We're decent. We're normal. You people aren't. Your leaders aren't. I mean, he says the U.S. and the West are decent countries, normal countries. Talk about sounding priggish and overweening. I mean, you can make up your own arguments about whether he's right or wrong or why he's wrong. I'm not even going to go there. But by the way, I will say this. I mean, I've followed Mike Pompeo as a journalist for many years. This is the same guy who once stood up and said that I, as a CIA director, because he was a CIA director at the time, said, my job is to lie, cheat, and steal. He said that. We lie, cheat, and we steal. Look for it. Google it. You'll hear him say it. I mean, he basically is saying, if you're not like us, you're bad. Interesting messaging. Here, listen to it again.
And we want those who are in between trying to figure out which side to be on. Don't pick the Chinese. Don't pick the Russians. Don't pick the Ayatollah. Be with Western civilization. Be decent.
The Russians and the Chinese are not normal, decent people. You know, Pompeo likes this war, but Americans generally don't. Right now, the polls are saying Americans, they don't like this. They didn't sign up for it, and they don't like it, especially if their gas continues to go up, and we're starting to see signs of that already. Why? Okay, let's talk about the Strait of Hormuz. Strait of Hormuz is already shut down. And that means that energy supplies, hydrocarbons, oil, natural gas, they're stopped up. Now, you watched my conversation yesterday when I was talking to the deputy foreign minister, and I asked him, have you shut it down? He said, no, we haven't shut it down. This is just what happens in war. Nobody's going in, nobody's going out. To a certain extent, he's right. Ships don't want to cross into the Persian Gulf. Insurance just to get in there is up to $500,000-$600,000, right? Just to cross. That's like me telling you, you can go ahead and go into the house, but it's burning. But if you want to go in there and get your stuff, go ahead. You're going to say, no, I'm not going to go in there and, you know, be in a fire, right? That's what these ship captains and these companies are doing. So they're all standing outside the Persian Gulf or inside the Persian Gulf, and they don't want to cross through the Strait of Hormuz for fear that they're going to be hit by a missile or attacked. So the story that I got from Iran yesterday when I interviewed Iranian officials was, we're not doing this. It's just kind of a natural consequence of war. But now Iranian military officials are telling a different story. Watch this military official from Iran talking.
The strait has been closed. If anyone tries to pass through it, our brave heroes in the Navy of the Revolutionary Guard and the Army will set their ships on fire. They should not come to this region. They will definitely face a serious and decisive response. And we will also target their pipelines in the region. We will not allow oil to be exported from this region so that they feel the pressure. The Americans have trillions of dollars in debt. They are thirsty for the region's oil. Not a single drop of oil will be poured down their throats. They should know this.
Wow. So, what effect does this have on global energy? China, for example? China's angry. And they're complaining to Iran, you know? Now, it looks like Iran is kind of doing a deal where they're going to have, like, gatekeepers there, and they're going to allow Chinese vessels to go through and some Russian vessels as well to go through, but not allow other vessels to go through. Remember, China's the one that gave the satellite systems that they're using now to hit many of their targets. And China is saying, we support Iran and condemn this attack by Israel and the United States. So that's the situation. By the way, speaking of Russia, this situation is a huge boost for Russia. This is huge for Russia. I mean, Russia's oil is now trading higher than it's ever traded before. It's more in demand than it's ever been before, and it's almost exclusive right now. The Indians, who were already buying a lot of it and paying a lot for it, are now buying more and are willing to pay more. So are the Chinese. Brent crude way up, right? They're talking that it might go to $100 a barrel. The Ural, which is the measure of Russian oil also way, way up. Now, Europe's already reeling, as you know, economically. For them, this is an economic disaster because they've got no other way of being able to get the oil other than most of the oil that comes through the Persian Gulf. And that becomes a big problem for them. You know, and this is something which continues to escalate. And it's not looking, despite what Mr. Trump said and the defense secretary or the war secretary said, this does not look like something that's going to be over anytime soon in just, you know, a matter of weeks because of all the things that I've just shown you and all the things that happen when you start a war. You lose control. Joining us now is attorney Michael Wynn. He is a former U.S. attorney and a federal prosecutor, according to my researchers. He's very much in favor of the U.S. attack on Iran. Counselor, thanks so much for joining us. We so appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And I should correct, I was assistant United States attorney, but I handled a lot of political and international cases from the Concord crash on.
I appreciate a guy who wants to be honest and correct about dates and figures and names, and because from a journalistic standpoint, I think that's very important. Hey, let's start with this latest poll I'm going to show you. This is an Ipsos poll, Reuters Ipsos poll. It shows that the American people, only 27% of them are for this attack on Iran. I think we can put it up and take a look at it. There it is. So it's 43% disapprove. 29% are like, huh? What happened? I'm not sure. And only 27% they approve. How are these folks who generally disapprove wrong?
Look, I'm going to reframe the question. The president, I do trust him. I trust his intelligence. He's thinking long term. I think it's rough to anthropomorphize countries and talk about Iran or China as single entities. I spent some time in Iran several years ago, mm-hmm. getting to know the people and the long-term Persian culture. I just don't, those who disapprove, you know, I think time will tell, and that in the long run, this will be seen as an incredibly wise decision. Regime change, that's tough. Telling another culture to change their entire perspective, you know, that's wrong too. But I think in the long run, we'll look at this, securing the Straits of Hormuz and eliminating entirely Iran's potential to continue to destabilize, threaten its neighbors. You know, that's a good thing. And the president, you know, if there's anybody in recent years who's been attuned to the polls, sensitive to any disapproval, you know, this, the fact that so many people disapprove of his actions is quite telling, and also suggests to me that he's got more information than we do.
Here's my problem. We've gotten like five different stories now as to why we're doing this, right? There's the nuclear issue. There is the ballistic missile issue. There is the fact that we have to change their government because their government are bad people. The people are good. The government's bad. And it's up to us to go in there to change that government and put somebody in there who we like or is more favorable to us. Then there's the question of whether or not we need to do this because they're a threat, for example, to Israel. In fact, here's Bibi Netanyahu making his case for why I, as an American, have to send my son or daughter into that country at some point, and why my money needs to be used to dethrottle or take out this government. Here, let's listen to Bibi.
The reason that we had to act now is because they were, after we hit their nuclear sites and their ballistic missiles program, you'd think they'd learn a lesson, but they didn't, because they're unreformable. They're totally fanatic about this, about the goal of destroying America. So they started building new sites, new places, underground bunkers that would make their ballistic missile program and their atomic bomb program immune within months. If no action was taken now, no action could be taken in the future. And then they could target America, they could blackmail America, they could threaten us and threaten everyone in between. So action had to be taken, and you needed a resolute president like Donald J. Trump to take that action.
I got to ask you, as an American, American to American, isn't this the same bullcrap we were told about Iraq and about Syria and about Vietnam? It's always those people are bad and they're coming for you, and then we go to a war, and in the end, it turns out not necessarily to be the case.
You know, that's what I started to say, that you cannot take an entire country and say these people are bad. That's just simply wrong. I've been over there. These people are good, strong people. They have a different cultural tradition. The regime is. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely opposed to troops on the ground like we saw in Iraq, Afghanistan. You know, we got so bogged down for so long. I'm against that. Absolutely against it. But these targeted strikes to get rid of the capability of this country, and it's a larger country than any of those, 93 million people with a 5,000-year-old tradition spread over a lot of terrain. We cannot put troops on the ground. We will lose. The best we can do, and that we have to do, it looks like we're doing, is to get rid of the capability to produce nuclear weapons.
But we're doing, but hold on. We're doing something else. I got to bring this up because, man, I just got some pictures, counselor, that came in that kind of break my heart. And they'll probably break your heart, too. This is a funeral for like some 130 little girls. This is a girls' school. These are young girls. This is terrible. So we kill their supreme leader, which you may not like him. I don't, you know, necessarily, you know, believe in him. But he's their religious leader. You know, I'm Catholic. I believe in my Pope. I wouldn't like if somebody took him out. And then we kill these children. My fear with this is, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, is the way this is being executed, we're throwing gasoline on a fire, man. We're going to an ant. You know, I'm from Florida, and we got those big red ant piles. And I always used to make sure I would cover them before my kids went out and played. Because, man, once you get into one of those, you can't stop it. It's Katie by the door. This is what I think these pictures might possibly cause, which makes me think this is not going to be a couple of weeks. This thing's going to be serious, and it's going to be protracted, and it could go on for a long time. And a lot of countries are going to be involved.
What happened there with the school is absolutely inexcusable. If we're going to do this, we got to do it right. You know, whoever made that miss has to be punished for that strategic error. That's inexcusable, you know, and I'm against, as I said, troops on the ground. We have enough intelligence. We have Israeli intelligence. We should know where everything is. Let's get rid of that, not put troops on the ground, not risk lives. And if we're going to send a guided missile, Lord knows, we got the technology. If we think we're going to be able to put a man on Mars sometime, we should be able to get this right and not hit schools. That's inexcusable.
You know, I also worry, though, about, you know, we tend to thump our chests and think we've got the best military in the world. We've got the most incredible ballistic missiles. Our ballistic missiles and our satellite defenses and our anti-ballistic defenses are going to be better than theirs. And now, as I'm watching this thing play out, I'm watching the Iranians almost hit all their targets. And I'm wondering, what the hell's going on? What happened to our Patriot systems? What happened to our anti-ballistic missile systems? Are they failing? Are they maybe not as good as we thought they were? And what does this portend for this thing going forward?
Look, I'm all for a strict and careful scrutiny of our ballistic systems. Lord knows we're paying enough in taxes for them. Yeah. They got to be right. We got to have, you know, strict and strong condemnation of any of these missiles. I share your concern that our military is overextended. The president campaigned on that theme to stay out of foreign wars. The fact that he's changed his mind, you know, suggests to me, especially in his second term with nothing to lose, that he legitimately has some information, and Marco Rubio does, and the generals do, that we're not privy to. I mean, we could find ulterior motives for the Iraq war. was against that. I was against the full invasion in 2003. I was stunned that we did it, stunned that we thought we'd establish a presence in the Middle East. That's, you know, egotistical hegemony, as you mentioned. This is something different. We got to get rid preemptively of this problem and then get out of there. We're not going to change. We're not going to convince them to go with China, go Russia. They're going to go where they're going to go, and they're going to determine who they're going to go, you know, where they're going to go. We just can't have them go in a direction where they pose an existential threat to our primary ally, you know, in the region. Can't do it.
Speaking of Rubio, a guy that I grew up in South Florida with, by the way, fellow Cuban-American, he just spoke on this, and I was kind of confused as to what he's trying to say. I think he's kind of saying two things here. One, that the only reason we went in was because we were forced to, because we felt like Israel was going to hit him, so we had to get in with Israel and hit him. And two, that somehow the Iranians were going to hit us before we hit them. You see if you can figure this out. Here's Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
Why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed.
See, call me crazy, but last time I checked, we're the United States of America, and this is Israel. So you pick up the phone and you call Israel and you say, no, you're not going to hit them. And if you want to do it on your own, fine. But we're not going to back your asses every time you want to get us into a fight, because it's our military, our money, our soldiers. Makes me a little angry to hear my Secretary of State say, well, Israel wanted to go, so we had to go. Bullcrap.
Yeah, that's incredibly sloppy, and I sure hope that's not the case. You know, perhaps it's unfortunate. I had not seen that clip, but it doesn't change my position that the two of them collectively going in together was most likely to achieve the correct solution. I think he spoke sloppily. I want to hope what he meant was that Israel was going to go in. We were concerned that they were going to create an untenable situation. They're much less likely to be successful. And that we agreed at that point collectively that it was in the interest of both nations to proceed. I think he spoke very sloppily. I sure hope that those words literally taken are incorrect.
Yeah,
I can only hope that.
You know, I talk to a lot of my friends. You know, I'm friends with Tucker and I'm friends with other people, both on the left and on the right. Some who are for, some who are against. But I do start to get this sense that there's a weariness in America, a weariness amongst people like myself who start thinking, you know, how much of this can we continue to do? I mean, my son has a hard time buying a house. My daughter has a hard time paying rent. I mean, we've got some crap we got to deal with in the United States right now. Inflation is high. Cost of housing is through the roof. I mean, we don't have a lot of the benefits that we even see in some of these countries that we're giving hundreds of billions of dollars to. And America's just starting to say, enough. Enough with taking care of others. Let's take care of ourselves. And what I fear with this situation in Iran is that Americans are looking at this and wondering the same thing. Look at this thing. 2 billion and look at this thing. This is a ticker that somebody has put up today that's being run all over the United States of Americans watching their tax dollars go to this damn thing. And it's hard to conceive of how many Americans, not all of us, I mean, I'm doing fine, and I think you are too, but there's a lot of people who are not doing so well. And they look at this and it makes them angry. And they should be angry, I think.
Look, I'm angry too. I just wrote a check for my 25 taxes. And, you know, I am fortunate and blessed. But I'll tell you, I just did it the other day.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, wow, what I could do to fund my daughter's education with that money. I'll tell you what, I am, you know, blessed. Not as much as many, but it hurts. And we're overextended. it cannot go on indefinitely. The country is weary. We renamed our Department of Defense the Department of War. You know, that's telling enough. I think the country is tired of foreign wars, except for very specific, narrow purposes. Taking out Iran's nuclear ability was one of them.
Yeah.
I think we stopped there. Done. Over. And leave it to the people. No. You know, in Iran, my sense going over there was that there was a lot of opposition to the regime. Popular uprising is really tough to coordinate. Really tough. I don't think there's an identified leader. But that's now up to them, as the president said. No troops on the ground. This country needs to worry about its own infrastructure, its own education, bring this country into the 21st century, creating the conditions for our kids and our grandchildren to enjoy our blessings too. Mm. Our agriculture, our manufacturing, I think infrastructure. You go to other countries, you see the high-speed rails and the other transportation networks, reconstructing our cities, dealing with the homelessness. Those are where we need to spend our money and our time, not foreign wars.
So, I mean, I imagine you probably voted for Donald Trump. So did I, by the way. I mean, if nothing else, given the alternative, it was very difficult to vote for anybody else. But I will say this. What he campaigned on is not the way he's executing the government. I didn't vote for him for this, for example. I see things that are different than the guy that I saw on the campaign trail. I'm a little frustrated by it. And I think a lot of other Americans are as well. What's your sense of that?
No, I am too. And, you know, again, I agree with this particular action. And I agree with taking out, President Maduro. That's the only path forward for Venezuela. Specific targeted actions, but the way he's governing in some respects, and you're right, the alternative was completely unacceptable. We were faced with a real tough choice there. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunately that good, solid people are dissuaded from entering the political arena because of the negative politics we have going forward. I don't know who in their right mind would want to run, say, for Congress or U.S. Mm-hmm. Senate now, just watching what the ads are today. I mean, nobody wants to put their family through that. So here we are. Now, with Mr. Trump, what most disappointed me so far was the wholesale slashing of senior leadership, say, in the Department of Justice, which I'm most familiar with, and other organizations, you know, because most of those senior people are the ones with the institutional knowledge, which is significant, regardless of your political persuasion. You got to have the folks who know the law, have the experience on both sides, really don't have a dog in the fight. And decimating that part of our federal infrastructure, I've seen firsthand, has been a huge problem. Yeah. You know, and there are other details. There was no other choice, as I say, in the general election. Mr. Trump, I think, has his intention in the right place. Let's not focus on some of these social issues, fringe issues, although they may be important to some people.
Yeah.
Of course, transgenderism, DEI, and those things come up. That can't be our national policy. It has to be make America first. So his attitude is right. Some of the actual decisions I have big problems with.
I agree. And I think there's an issue there. I happen to have issues with his foreign policy as well. We can differ on that. Oh, by the way, I'm told now that we're joined by Professor Mostafa Hoshashem. Professor Mostafa, always great to see you. Professor Mostafa is joining us from Tehran, which is why I guess he's late coming to the conversation. I don't know how much of our conversation you've heard so much, Professor, but Counselor Wynn essentially is in favor of the action in Iran, though he's not necessarily in favor of the way that it's being executed thus far, and he's not in favor of it in its totality. He does believe, though, that we need to bring Iran under control in some way. Can you give him your counter argument for why you believe this was not a good decision by any stretch of the imagination, as I'm sure you believe.
Hello, Rick, and thanks for having me. Well, no, I didn't hear much of the argument, actually. What I could say is that Iran has not been threatening anyone. It was not threatening Israel. We were in the midst of the talks, then they attacked again, and this is the second time that it's happening. Iran has never been, has never opened war against any other country in the region for the past 300 years, while Israelis and Americans have always been at war for the past century.
We got to trust our president and his advisors at this point. He's not a fool. He's not this. Is if you're ever going to be a fool, this is not the time to do it. Second, Article 51 of the UN Charter does authorize such actions in legitimate self-defense. So,
how can this be self-defense?
Iran has had proxies in the Middle East and elsewhere for years and years and years, fighting its own fights for it. Hamas, yeah. Hezbollah, the rest of them. All right, so it may not have gone. And what exactly was the Iran-Iraq war about back in the mid-1980s? What was that about? So don't give me this that Iran has been peaceful and not started any wars. That's simply incorrect.
Yeah, but the idea that this is self-defense on the part of the United States, and I guess the question that has to be asked and that a lot of people have asked, and I'm not sure we've got a direct answer for this, is how is Iran a threat to America, to a guy living in Kansas or in my hometown or in Texas where you are right now? How is Iran a threat to the United States? I understand it may be a threat to Israel, but go on.
Yeah, well, the unquestionably, Israel's and the United States' interests are aligned in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf. I mean, it's hard, very hard to get around that fact. Economically and culturally, it is. Like it or not, you know, the United States is responsible for, at least for now, serving as the
policeman,
if you will.
Yeah.
How can they hurt? Cut off the Straits of Hormuz. Just cut them off. That will severely endanger the world economy. And they are in a position to do it. And they're in a position to threaten, you know, the Saudi oil fields right across the Persian Gulf. They're in a great position to do it, as well as sponsoring individual acts of terrorism in Paris, in Jerusalem, all over. They're in a position to do it. And let me also say that the words "death to America," they mean something. Why are you saying we don't say death to Iran? We didn't say death to Vietnam. Death to America over and over and over again. Look, you got to take that seriously.
I guess we got audio back with Professor Mustafa. I see you smiling, which means you can hear us. Professor Mustafa, I think you want to counter that. Please go ahead.
It's ridiculous. Whatever I heard since I got back is ridiculous. My colleague says Iraq. What was Iran-Iraq war? The Iraqis attacked Iran. That's a taken for granted fact. Everyone knows that. That was Saddam Hussein, who also attacked Kuwait. That's the reason why it happened. We were defending ourselves. Like this time, you attacked us. The Americans attacked us. We are defending ourselves. And you're talking about Hezbollah and Hamas. Okay, 47 years ago, Islamic Republic was born. What happened to Israel and its neighbors before that? Ever since the occupation of Palestine, they've been attacking others, killing others, making nuclear bombs. Who has given them the right to have nuclear bombs in the Middle East? Why don't you ever try to denuclearize the Israelis? No, it's ridiculous. You're talking about Strait of Hormuz. You don't know. Strait of Hormuz has two channels. The main channel that's taken by everyone goes through the Iranian waters. That's Iran's water, and it's our water, and we can shut it up as soon as we want, and we will do that. This kind of thinking, this kind of ideological thinking, by Americans, that they think that they can do whatever they want to do to anyone. This is the problem. And they're going to pay the price. They thought that if they kill, assassinate another country's leader so easily, kidnap another one in Venezuela, and there won't be a price to pay. There is a price to pay. No American can be safe in this part of the world from now on. It's not just Iran. We're talking about Pakistan. We're talking about parts of India. We're talking about Iraq, Lebanon. We are talking about Yemen. We are talking about many others across the Persian Gulf.
Let me just stop you there for a moment, Professor Mustafa. We've got pictures coming in right now of the scenes that you're describing. Let me take you through a couple of the scenes around the world right now. These are mostly Shias and others who are protesting the U.S.'s attack on Iran. Have we got those pictures, Gene? If we could put those up. Okay, this is Tehran. This is what has been going on in Tehran within the last 24 hours. This is Yemen. This is Sana'a, Yemen. These are protests against the United States and Israel because of the attack on Iran. This is Beirut, Lebanon. You're looking at the pictures now coming in from Beirut, Lebanon. Same scenes. Again, mostly Shia. This is Baghdad, where the United States has bases, obviously, and the people are against those. This is in India, where there is also a huge protest. Let's take you to Karachi, Pakistan. Several people dead there because of the protests. And even in our own country, Washington, D.C., much smaller, but protests against the war as well. Vienna, Austria, a protest against the war taking place as well. As you look at this, you do get a sense that there is there's some kind of pushback that is taking place. What is your response to that, Mike?
Okay, first of all, I'd like to also see photos of those protests in support. I'd like to see date stamps on each of those clips that you showed me, but I'd like to see also the many in support around the world. Now, Professor made my point. He said no American, that is individual, can be safe in that part of the world. No one in our country said no Iranian can be safe in America. I got plenty of Iranian friends in Houston, Texas here. All of them are safe. You know, he's making it about individuals. No American can be safe. That's a threat against individuals. That is the difference between our two governments. We are dealing with military installations and policy. He's making war on individuals. That is all we need to hear.
Professor, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, we say it. He said in the former part, he said,
you said individual.
Iranians have been saying death to America. Okay, I'm coming for you. He said Iranians are saying death to America. Thank you. We say death to America. You take action. You kill Iranians. This is no joke. It's not just Iranians. Go check people across the Middle East. They all say they have long been saying death to America, because they have seen your crimes in Libya, in Sudan, Somalia, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Vietnam, everywhere you've been to, you have left a failed state, you've been killing people. Now, I said, and I insist on that, no American will be safe in this region from now on. It's not me or my country, it's the Muslim community. This is not what I said. This is what was warned by top religious leader Ayatollah Sistani in Iraq. If you know him, he issued a paper last time there was a war, and he warned that if anything happens to the Iranian supreme leader, no one can stop the Muslims all across the region from killing those responsible. And those responsible are Americans.
But I think what he means is hold on. Professor, hold on a minute. Do you want to kill me? I'm an American. I was just in your country.
No, of course not.
Well,
Rick, you know, not you, neither you nor anyone else who might come and visit Iran. By that, I mean the US Army, the US contractors, the U.S. logistical backup, like in Dubai, like in Abu Dhabi, that we used to talk about it, and also There are many other the spying networks that they have. Also, there won't be any American company left alone in this region. Let's be honest with each other. This is war. We are talking about war. And war has some features and specifications. There are rules to war. Now, Americans are playing with no rules. They are bombing, just as I'm talking to you, just 100 meters above my house was bombed. Another one was dropped in about 150 yards. Another one on 200 yards. All around my house is being bombed. My family, they are afraid, but we are going to resist. That's the problem for you to understand. We are going to stand here. We are going to take revenge. And this is for sure. And this is just the beginning. Donald Trump thought that if he assassinated the Iranian Supreme Leader, everything is going to be finished in about a few hours or days. No, this is going to be a long, long war ahead. And Iranians are just preparing to level up attacks on U.S. air bases as well as Israel since tonight.
Do you get a sense? Let me stop you and ask you a question, because this is what the president says he wants. This is what Mr. Rubio, Mr. Pompeo, and others have said they want. They're thinking that there is enough pressure in your country against your government. And by the way, there's plenty of people in your country, as you and I talked about, who are angry at the government and not happy with the economy, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not asking you if everybody in the country is happy. What I'm asking you is, can this lead to enough people in your country wanting to change their government, wanting to remove Peroshkian and others like him? Yes?
Rick, that failed. That was the scheme. That was the scheme by the U.S. and Israelis, and that has already failed. Because if you just come and visit Iran nowadays, you can see that there are many who had economic and cultural and political grievances. Now they are out in the streets after the assassination of the Iranian Supreme Leader. They go every night, they go to the streets, and they shout in support of the Islamic Republic and in support of resistance against this foreign aggression. Everyone, those who supported the Islamic Republic and those who had grievances,
you're saying it's consolidated. The attack has consolidated.
Yeah, it's consolidated the public. And you can see the bombs are dropped every minute around them. Just take a look at the video footages that are coming out, if you can. You will see that bombs are dropped. They look at the bomb site, and they move ahead and all together in thousands, and they go on shouting support for Islamic Republic.
I'm going to stop you for a minute because I'm going to ask. Counselor Wynn, Mike just asked a minute ago, how do we know that those pictures that we're showing are true? I checked some of them. I checked the one in India. I checked the one in Pakistan. I checked the one in Baghdad. They're obviously true because I just checked with news sources on those. Now, as far as the pictures we showed a little while ago in Baghdad, can you confirm that there are people on the streets of Baghdad protesting? Are those pictures true that we just showed a little while ago?
Professor? Asking me?
Yes. Yeah, we just showed masses of people. It looks like tens of thousands of people on the streets.
As far as I know, there was a large crowd in Najaf and in one or two more cities last night and the night, or two nights ago, actually. Tonight, I have not checked again to see what's going on in Iraq, but because they are bombing and I have lots of things to do, my work, and also doing these interviews. And we are busy with the public that go out after the sunset. They go out in thousands all across Tehran and in different cities across the country. They are out to show that they will not let the terrorists attack Iran, because the scheme is way wider than this.
How much does that concern you?
The scheme that they had.
Mike, how much does that concern you that you and I talked about this earlier, pardon me, that sometimes in an effort to try and stop something, we actually increase it. And we might be making the problem worse in places like Iran with people who maybe didn't like the government now are backing the government just because, what the hell, it's their government and they don't want to see it being attacked by somebody else. How big a concern is that, you think?
It depends on what you call the it is. And the it was a quagmire in Iraq and in Vietnam. And as I said earlier on this program, the target here is and should be limited, which is to destroy the capacity of Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon because of the rhetoric that we have to take face value. As far as other consequences, you know, as I said, there's likely, and I've seen photographs on the exact opposite side of people celebrating what the United States has decided to do.
Professor, are there people celebrating? Are there? Let's stop and ask. Are there people? He's right. I saw videos too of people celebrating, by the way, in Iran.
You could find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, 10 people that might do so. They have been brainwashed by some opposition TVs. But when we're talking about people, when we say people, at least we should talk about 1 million people, 100,000 people, something when we say people. So you're talking about some individuals. We are not sure if they are more than a handful or not. We don't know the numbers, but you are ignoring the number of the people that are out in the streets all across the country, exactly like 2 months ago when there were rioting in Tehran and in Iran. You were seeing people, maybe in tens of thousands, but you ignored the millions that took out in the streets to put an end to this mutiny and to this rioting.
Let me ask, part of it
is because of the Western media hegemony. Part of it is because of the Western media hegemony. Like, just tell me how many pictures and how many videos have you seen from the U.S. targets that have been devastated by Iran? Do they give you any real footage of what has happened to the U.S. bases in Bahrain, in Kuwait, in the UAE, and in Israel especially? Do they give you? No. This is censorship. Part of his
That's not fair. Before you came on, I was having a conversation with Mike, and he said no. I see it. In fact, I thought the United States would be able to do whatever it wanted to, and Iran would not even be able to fire off many rockets. He's admitted, and he knows that the rockets that Iran is firing into these are hitting their targets. As a matter of fact, the question that
not thoroughly. Tell me how many. Impact sites have you seen in Israel since last night? Tell me how many impact sites, how many targets
have we shown the video of the attacks near Jerusalem, and we've shown parts of Tel Aviv that look devastated, and we've had it here on the air. I mean,
and that's it, and nothing beyond that.
Your point is
true. Only two targets. We fired successfully, and they were not intercepted. I'm talking about those missiles that hit the target successfully in 15 different locations. Each location has been bombed by 2, 3, 5 missiles and more. But you don't know, because we fired like 100 missiles at them. Yeah, they went to intense, but you just know about 2 targets.
Are you
not about the rest?
I take your point. I take your point, and I appreciate your correction. Before we go, and we're down to just a few minutes, and I want to ask you both the question. Let me ask you a personal question. Are you scared? Are you worried? You're sitting in your apartment knowing that the building next door was just blown up. How are you doing?
No. Remember the last time we saw each other in Tehran? We met each other?
Yeah.
You asked me. Yeah, I told you, we don't care about how strong they threaten us. We don't care really about that. I have seen the Iran-Iraq war. I've seen the last war. We have all experienced war for so many years. We have been experiencing sanctions and coup d'etat efforts and many, like assassination of presidents, of parliament members, of judiciary chiefs. They have been assassinating 23, they have assassinated actually 23,000 Iranians. We are used to it.
Yeah,
we don't care about
and,
it.
And we should add, and we should add using chemical weapons, by the way, which is a part of the ugly part of the story.
Yeah.
Final question to you, Councillor Nguyen. Mike, I really respect you for coming on, but I have to ask, wouldn't there have been a better way to do this without having to use warfare? Why not continue the negotiations that seem to be going very well? At times, both sides said we're making progress. Why stop that?
Yeah, that has been our program for far, far too long. You know, we talk about different sizes of crowds. Since when has Iran been a democracy? It hasn't. If you took that seriously, you would have had serious elections. Mm. And you haven't. Iran is a vast, vast area. I pray that however this turns out, that we preserve, and it's your responsibility, sir, to preserve the cultural artifacts of this country and the history of the Persian people dating back 5,000 years. I pray that that is one of the things you're trying to do. America is a reluctant empire. Let's face it. It's a reluctant empire. It was all that was left after World War II. I wish we'd been able to find a different way. We haven't. And I pray for our leaders that they are more exact in their targeting, and this ends soon.
Professor, I can give you 15 seconds if you want to put a final point on this.
Yeah, he's right. Look at the United States democracy. At the end of the day, the best thing it has given out has been Donald Trump, a pedophile, a narcissist, a crazy guy who has imposed tariffs and withdrew him. I mean, he has failed to bring the policy to any kind of fruitful results. And he has opened war on different nations. He kidnaps leaders.
And,
he assassinates leaders. And he has made the world insecure. And this is the product of the U.S. democracy.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. But I want to thank both of you gentlemen for coming on with opposing views and having what I think has been a respectable discussion about a very difficult situation. And I agree with both of you that we should do everything possible to pray that this thing ends as soon as possible and that somehow we have some kind of peace and stop the warfare. Councillor Nguyen, thank you, sir, for taking time to share your opinions and your thoughts with us. And Professor Mustafa, I hope you can stay safe. You're a good man, and you've always been very honest. And I know it was difficult for you to take time in while bombs are falling around you to come on the air and have this conversation with us. And I apologize for the audio glitch and the interruptions that were sometimes caused by
the
situation. Hopefully, we'll be talking again on better terms.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you both, and God bless. Wow. As usual, you know, it's important to have these types of conversation. Beats the hell out of killing. Beats the hell out of some of the pictures that we were showing a little while ago while we were showing up some of this. I want you to know that we're going to continue this discussion. We're going to be doing this discussion effectively on several social platforms that we're now on. Spotify, for one, which has picked us up and is running these shows. On BitChute, we're now going to have this conversation. If you haven't checked out BitChute, please do, because I now have a page there called Rick Sanchez TV, where we publish some of this stuff and continue this discussion, as well as on YouTube with Journalistically Speaking, which is my homepage and channel there, and of course on X, where tens of thousands of you already are engaging and have been for the last month. Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you next time.